The fight over your benefits continues on Capitol Hill as Congress sorts out the 2015 budget. Your thrift savings plan, though, is not likely to change much, and that is a good thing. Chris Hill is the host of Motley Fool Money. You hear it on Federal News Radio Mondays at noon, and he's in studio with me as my co-host for the day. It's very exciting that you're here, Chris. I have to start out by saying I'm a huge fan of Motley Fool Money, and I'm a huge fan of Market Foolery, your daily podcast, and it's great to have you here.
It's great to be here, and I appreciate that. I'm excited to be here, and it can only go down from here.
The implosion button is over here, and it automatically plays tapes of previous shows in case things just completely go to pieces. What I didn't know until today about you is that you are a thrift savings plan account holder. So you have a unique perspective on and how good people in the federal government have it when they have thrift savings plan accounts.
I love the thrift savings plan. I worked in the federal government on Capitol Hill for 6 years, so I've got the thrift savings plan statement coming to me just like a lot of your listeners do. And there are a lot of great things about it. First and foremost, I love the low fees. That's something that a lot of people don't think about when it comes to investing, whether it's individual stocks or mutual funds. Fees can just be a killer over time, and the low fees of the thrift savings program are just fantastic.
The gig, if for people who haven't heard either your show or the podcast, first of all, if you haven't and you're interested in investing and the world of business and so on, it's must listening. Mondays at noon, as I mentioned, on Federal News Radio, and online at fool.com/radio.
You can go to motleyfoolmoney.com. Oh, okay. And our daily podcast is just marketfoolery.com.
Okay. Excellent. And I have a bunch of Market Fooleries on my phone. I'm holding up my phone here because I was listening to the Friday one on the way in here, actually. The gig essentially is you and your colleagues talk about companies from an investor's perspective, but also from, to some degree, I would say, a consumer perspective to help people who are investing understand where investing opportunities might be. So it might be counterintuitive for somebody who listens to your program on an ongoing basis to hear you say, what you're in the thrift savings plan is kind of the opposite of what you do in your quote unquote day job where you're choosing companies to invest in.
Absolutely. I work at the Motley Fool, a company with about 300 employees based in Alexandria, Virginia. And our mission as a company is to help the world invest better. And we do that through different services, through our fool.com website. And as you said, through our weekly radio show and our daily podcast. In terms of the thrift savings program, right, at the Motley Fool, we're all about stocks. Mm-hmm. We love individual companies. We think the stock market is the best way to grow your wealth over time. And the reason we think that is the numbers bear it out. Stocks are, over the long term, are better than bonds, better than baseball cards, better than real estate. And so when you look at the thrift savings program, for me as an investor, the C fund, which is the fund that mirrors the returns of the S&P 500 index, that's the best fund to be in because over time you're looking at roughly 9%, 10% per year. And that's the great thing about the stock market is the longer your holding period, the better you're going to do.
Now, the general thought behind foolish investing as your company does it is actually similar to what people recommend about the thrift savings plan. You guys never recommend trading stocks excessively. You're not doing this for short-term gain. You do adhere, from what I hear on the program, to the kind of the buy and hold idea where you're not trying to get in and out of stuff on an ongoing basis.
Absolutely. Our CEO, Tom Gardner, has said the first thing anyone who's looking to improve their investment returns, the first thing they should consider doing is just doubling their holding period because a lot of times our holding period is too short. Sometimes that's because we're working with a financial advisor who's saying, hey, look, this stock is down a little bit. You should sell. You should lock in your gains, that sort of thing. That kind of trading, particularly because you have sometimes short-term tax gains or taxes on top of that, that can hurt your returns. So doubling your holding period, Warren Buffett, the great investor, has said his favorite holding period is forever because as long as you are in great companies, yes, they may have a bad quarter here and there, but over time, they're going to outpace the market in general.
And that's one of the reasons why, full disclosure, my wife and I have never gone quite all the way when it goes, when it comes to foolish investing. We are actually the allocations that we have kind of mirror the thrift savings plan. A bunch in S&P 500 indexes, a bunch in international indexes, and a small amount in bond indexes, comparable to what some people would hold in cash. The concepts that I hear on your program on an ongoing basis apply, I think, to folks who are thinking about their thrift savings plan accounts and who are trying to think about how old am I, when am I going to take the money out, how do I want to allocate, and all those kinds of things. And one of the things that's different that you and I talked about before we went on the air from when you were in government is the life cycle funds and the advantages that they bring to people who maybe investing is not my thing and I don't want to spend the time doing the research and all of that, but here's a package that will keep me from making the biggest mistake I think people make in the TSP, and that is sticking a bunch of money in the G fund, letting it sit there. And yeah, you haven't really lost any money, but you have missed all the opportunities for that 8 to 10% that you talked about in the stock market a few moments ago.
I think it's easy, particularly in the wake of the high-frequency trading story that broke last week. It's easy, and it is understandable, frankly, that people look at the stock market as a rigged game that they can't win at. In fact, the opposite is the truth. The C fund, the index fund, if you just invest in that and you hold that over a 10, 20, 30-year period, not only are you going to get a great return, you're gonna do better than most professional money managers, people who are managing mutual funds, because a lot of them are losing to the market's average because they are trading on a daily basis. But to your point about the G fund, again, it's easy and understandable to think, I just want my money to be safe. Mm-hmm. But depending on your age, that's a situation where the old adage, the greatest risk is not taking enough risk. That's where that comes into play. Because if you are in your 20s, 30s, even your 40s, I would argue, you really should be almost entirely in the C fund, if assuming you are looking to retire at the age of 65, sort of the traditional age, we'll just use that. Mm-hmm. But that's when you should start, maybe when you're in your 40s, to look to diversify maybe a little bit more into bonds. Obviously, the closer you get to retirement age, the more you want to be in bonds because they're safer, that sort of thing. But I think the life cycle funds are a wonderful innovation, in part because of the low fees, but in part because it's an easy way for people to wrap their head around diversification and get them thinking, because over and above what they're doing with the thrift savings program, then they can start to say, well, wait a minute, if my money is safe here, mm-hmm. then maybe if I have a little extra money that I can invest in a growth stock or two and take a little bit more risk, hopefully for some more reward down the line.
Chris Hill of Motley Fool Money is my guest and co-host of the program today. The common investing mistakes that you hear people make. I think there are a lot of folks that are in the thrift savings plan that think, well, they've simplified this for me, so the mistakes that a lot of investors make, I won't be able to make because I really, when it comes to funds, I only have five choices and then the five life cycle funds. But I'm not sure that's the case, is it? I think some of those common mistakes you can still make inside a TSP-type account, can't you?
Absolutely. Again, depending on your age, if you are looking at it and not really – first of all, it's something you should be checking on a yearly basis. Just as we check in with our taxes, check in with your investments. Mm-hmm. And don't just read the statement and look at it and think, well, how are my returns? Really try and step back and think, wait a minute, what are my investing goals? What is my investing plan? At the Motley Fool, we focus on stocks, and every stock, every company that we try to become a part owner of, we try and ask ourselves, well, what is my reason for buying this company? What is my thesis? That's how you should be thinking about your own investing life with the Thrift Savings Program. What is my plan? Because if you're in your 20s or 30s and you're thinking you're looking to retire comfortably someday, if the majority of your money is in the G fund, you really need to rethink that.
Mm-hmm. I have a hard time picturing how somebody secures a retirement only gaining 3 to 5% a year. And that's the range over the past 10, 15 years that the G fund has been in. And it's not really easy to build wealth at that rate of return, it doesn't seem.
Absolutely. In some ways, you know, you hear all the time about Social Security. Well, you need more of an investment plan than just Social Security. You won't be able to live on that alone. Mm-hmm. I would argue that you probably wouldn't be able to live on just the G fund returns. If you start working in the federal government at the age of 25 mm-hmm. and you're there for 40 years and all your money is in the G fund, there have been studies that have been done. Yes, in any given year, the stock market and therefore the C fund can have a bad year and it can drop. But if you look at rolling 10 and 20 year periods, 1930 to 1940, 1932 to 1942, et cetera, stocks outpace bonds consistently throughout history. So again, you need that long time frame, but fortunately, for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is good health, people are living longer. Mm-hmm. People have a greater opportunity to build their wealth through the C fund. And it is something that, you know, it's not always easy to talk about. And sometimes, as you said at the top, Francis, a lot of people, they just don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. It's not in their circle of competence.
Yep.
They're kind of bored by it. But as we say at the beginning of our weekly radio show, everybody needs money. That's why they call it money. And, you know, and that's how you get money, is by growing it over time.
It's great to have you here, Chris. I'm just a huge fan of the show, and I'm happy you're here to co-host with me this afternoon. Chris Hill is the host of Motley Fool Money. You hear it Mondays at noon on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and federalnewsradio.com. The Defense Information Systems Agency approves BlackBerry 10 now for use on DoD systems, but just about nobody else is moving to BlackBerry. Some other companies are impacting how you do your job, and your agency's decisions, in some cases, can impact what happens to companies. Chris Hill is the host of Motley Fool Money, my guest co-host on the program today. You hear Motley Fool Money Mondays at noon on Federal News Radio. It's great to have you with me this afternoon, Chris. I appreciate you being here. This BlackBerry story is fascinating to me because, as we talked about a moment ago before we went on the air, BlackBerry at one time was just riding high. And at one time, the co-founder of BlackBerry had enough money that he was going to buy the Phoenix Coyotes hockey team and move them to Hamilton, Ontario. BlackBerry is a Canadian company. The prospects of the company are quite a bit bleaker now than they are then, even though DISA is going to allow BlackBerry 10, and that's the first smartphone that they've approved for use on their systems. But they're really a lone wolf when it comes to the broader market, aren't they?
Absolutely. And just looking at consumers, BlackBerry, it was not that long ago, BlackBerry had about 40% of the mobile phone market. That number is down to like 2 or 3%. And the BlackBerry 10, that's the interesting part of this story for me, that they're going with the BlackBerry 10 because that's supposedly the latest and greatest operating system for BlackBerry. They had been really pushing that for a while. They kept pushing it back, delaying the release of it. Mm-hmm. Only about a third of their sales are for the BlackBerry 10. The people, the everyday consumers who are choosing BlackBerries, 2 out of 3 are issuing the BlackBerry 10 for older models.
Wow.
So it's great that BlackBerry got this approval. It's just my hunch. I don't know, but my hunch is that Apple and Android is seeking the same approval as well.
Yes.
But this is, unfortunately, a common story when it comes to technology companies. Once upon a time, the Palm Pilot was the hot new gadget.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're gone now.
There is the Apple case, as far as selling to the government, is interesting because you well know from having covered Apple as a company, they pretty much do their own thing. And if you want to accommodate Apple, that's fine, but they're not really that interested in accommodating you. And that's been difficult for the federal government to get past because they're used to it being that way too, at least having the vendor come to them in some degree. The Android devices have been easier for the government to assimilate because there's normally some vendor relationship in between the manufacturer of the product and the customer of the product, in this case the federal government agencies, to help them navigate that and to make sure that the security is going to be sufficient and all of those other things. Apple is pretty much you take it or you leave it, and it's been a little more not impossible. There are some agencies that are doing it, but one of the things that I noticed as I looked at this stuff over the weekend, I see stories every once in a while where an agency will say, well, we're going to buy 25,000 iPhones or X number of Android devices. And In the grand scheme of 2 million federal employees, many of who still carry BlackBerries, 25,000 here or there, isn't really a big market share anymore. I mean, there's still a long way to go for some of these other companies to try to hit BlackBerry, and yet the rest of the world doesn't seem to care anymore.
Right. And this is one of those stories that if you step back and look at it, it makes sense from both sides, mm-hmm. right? If you're the federal government, you're saying, no, we're the federal government. You're going to pitch us. We're going to have standards that you're going to comply with. That makes sense. And that makes sense from a business standpoint. Just as an American citizen, I like that.
Yeah.
But if you're Apple, it absolutely makes sense. I'm not an Apple shareholder, but if I were, I would be happy about the way Apple is handling this, saying, hey, look, we get that there's a market of 2 million government employees there, but there's a whole world of billions of people who have yet to buy a mobile phone. We're going to pitch to that market. If we lose the federal government market, so be it, but we're going to do our best to capture the larger market.
Another company that you report on Motley Fool Money, which is Mondays at noon on Federal News Radio and on your podcast every day, which is called Market Foolery, is Microsoft. And Microsoft is up against a big deadline tomorrow that affects a lot of people that work for the federal government. And yet I can't help but wonder how big of a deadline it really is. I've seen a lot of stories in the trade press over the last week or week and a half about this countdown to the end of support for Microsoft XP. XP's been around, I want to say, for 8 or 10 years. I have an XP computer at home that's 10 years old, so I guess it's been at least that long. But for many people, including government agencies, the XP computers and operating system that they work under works just fine. And I'm surprised that we haven't seen much of a move toward at least some level of support one way or the other from Microsoft for these agencies who really don't have a need to move.
It's a different case with Microsoft because, as we've seen, computers and operating systems become more robust over time. People and agencies and companies don't need to upgrade their cycles as often as they used to. Microsoft is something of a victim of its own success in mm-hmm. that regard. I saw a story earlier today that Microsoft is also dealing with a deadline on ATMs. A lot of banks using Microsoft software. And so Microsoft has not had the success over the last 10 years that Apple has had. So I would be surprised if Microsoft didn't quietly reverse course and see what they could do to accommodate the agencies on this.
And that deadline, again, supposed to be tomorrow, but I did see over the weekend that the government in England, the United Kingdom, has reached an agreement with Microsoft's European organization. They're going to give them an extra year of support just for the government, not for commercial customers or private individuals. So I wouldn't shock me if something like that came out later this afternoon or tomorrow to kind of give the federal government a reprieve. Something like that might exist already, but nobody seems to have caught on to it here for the U.S. government.
Yeah, and again, if you're Microsoft, you're looking for as many friends as you can get these days. Mm-hmm. And so having a friend in the government in the U.K. And certainly here in the United States is definitely one you want to hold on to.
A company that we pay a lot of attention to is a company that used to be known as SAIC, Science Applications International Corporation. SAIC still exists, but there is another company called Leidos that came out of a split with SAIC. I noticed that their stock, first of all, has not done very well since the split. And they're now announcing a buyback. They're going to buy their own stock. And you talk about buybacks and these things that companies do on your programs on a number of occasions. What does it mean in general, not necessarily specifically for SAIC and Leidos, but what does it mean for companies generally when they announce a stock buyback? Can you fit the reasons for them doing it into one or two or three buckets of reasons that they usually do it?
Absolutely. Buying back shares off of the open market is simply a way for a company to reduce the number of shares outstanding and therefore take a little bit more control over their stock, and also frequently just boost the share price a little bit in the process. I think what we're seeing in the case of Leidos is you look at the stock drop in the wake of their latest earnings report, down, I think, 18% in a single day. Mm-hmm. They come out quickly with the announcement to buy back 200 million worth of shares in the near term. So a lot of times we'll see share buyback plans over an extended period of time. They're basically coming out saying, nope, we're spending this money and we're spending it quick. That's an opportunistic move. They clearly believe that there was an overreaction from the market. That's one way companies buy back stock.
Mm-hmm.
Another, and we see it more with sort of larger companies, is they don't have a lot of catalysts to move their stock. They are stocks that investors look at more as sort of dividend paying stocks rather than growth stocks. They're older, they're more mature. So for companies like that, it's a way for them to boost their share price a little bit. But again, if you're an investor and you're looking for a greater return, you're looking for more growth stocks, you don't want to be investing in companies like that. When share buybacks are among the top two or three reasons that will propel a stock higher, that's never a good sign.
Yeah. So it sounds like, if I were a guessing person, I would guess that Leidos saw the stock drop because of their earnings and said, hey, we have some cash on hand and we have an opportunity to take back more control over our company at a sale price. I mean, essentially, we think that the stock is undervalued. They kind of took a typical investor's perspective to their own company, it sounds like.
If we're going to buy back shares tomorrow, all of a sudden the price is 18% cheaper than it was yesterday.
Right.
So, and I'm sure they looked at it and said, wait a minute. We gave some guidance to the market and to analysts saying, you know what, this next year is not going to be quite as robust as you're hoping for. We didn't come out and say we're going out of business.
Right.
And that's how I'm guessing they viewed the stock drop.
Well, and so then if I'm either an employee of that company or a partner of that company, in the context of how you're presenting it, then if I hear that, I think, well, this can't be as bad as it sounds then, because the company obviously is putting its money where its mouth is. If they say we're going to be okay and things are we're going to work toward building our value back, they wouldn't go and spend a whole lot of money on any company's stock who they perceive to be going down in value.
Absolutely. And the bigger companies get, the more important their capital allocation becomes, which is a fancy way of something, fancy way of saying how they spend their money.
Mm-hmm.
So if all of a sudden they had allocated $200 million for something else spread out over a variety of initiatives, they see the stock drop. They say, wait a minute, the plans we have for this money are good, but an even better use is to opportunistically buy back these shares, to do it quick while the market is overreacting, we believe, and betting against us, as the people selling our stock are. And we're going to take advantage of that.
Chris Hill's the host of Motley Fool Money. You hear it on Mondays at noon on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. And he's my co-host in studio with me this afternoon. You can hear my conversation with Chris later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.